Information-fueled, opinion-driven. This is the Dan Mandis Show, Super Talk 99.7.
It is Super Talk 99.7 WTN, Dan Mandis Show. Hello, hello. So much stuff going on now and only an hour left. And then Phil Valentine is coming up after the news at 3:06 here on Super Talk 99.7 WTN. Big programming note tomorrow at about what, 7:05 or so? We've got Ralph Bristol going to be speaking to Darren Hall, a sheriff for Davidson County, going to be talking about this whole controversy where Nashville is going to become essentially a sanctuary city if Metro Council has anything to do with it. The guy that's got to deal with all this really as part of his everyday job is Sheriff Darren Hall, who has come out now, and you've heard me talking about this and Ralph for the last couple, everybody for the last couple of days. And so Ralph is going to have the man on himself at 7:06 at Darren Hall here on Super Talk 99.7 WTN. And then later at about 12:35 or so, if I can manage to stay on time, we've got May Beavers running for governor, of course, and she's going to talk about this bill as well. And one of the things that I'm going to ask May is, okay, so what could you do if your governor and the Metro Council passes this godforsaken policy, what can you do? I would ask her, what is she going to be able to do as governor? And of course, I have also spoken to some state legislators who also say that there are things that they can do as well. The big question is this much ado about nothing? Somebody sent me an email yesterday and said, yeah, this is much ado about nothing because, you know, President Trump's going to take care of all of the illegal immigration. I do appreciate that. My worry, though, is that, one, we do know that the wall is not going to be built. I mean, let's face it. The wall is not going to be built. I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but I just don't think it is. But the other thing is, I know that the president has been talking quite a bit, obviously, about how we need to defund sanctuary cities and a lot of that tough talk. And I think this is where the emailer was going with President Trump and a lot of this tough talk that he's been embarking on since even before November 8th. And that has proven to be effective in slowing or curtailing folks coming over the border. However, if we have a sanctuary city policy, what that's going to do is, just like we have Trump's tough talk, really slowing down people coming over the border. What that'll do is that'll drive the illegals that are still in this country to Middle Tennessee, to Nashville. And that's not good for anybody. And also, the other thing that I've noticed is, and what I loved is, after I had a couple of different conversations about this on the radio in the last couple of days with some various lawmakers and so forth, is we asked people yesterday, you know what, email your council people, email your representatives, you know, email Metro Council and so forth. And what they're doing, what these folks are doing on the Metro Council is they're saying, well, this isn't really a sanctuary city policy. Well, if you look at what they're, and we talked about this yesterday, if you look at what the definition of a sanctuary city is, and then you look at the policy that Metro Council is trying to enact, it is by definition a sanctuary city policy. So that's the thing that we need to look at is, okay, so if the left, and if, when I say the left, I mean the folks on the city council, Bell, help me out here. Bell, who did I interview yesterday? Oh, Robert,
Swope.
Swope, thank you, Robert. I'm sorry. I don't know why. For the last 3 minutes, I've been trying to remember who I interviewed yesterday. Robert Swope. One of the great
things.
It's
the weather. I'm brain dead, too.
It is the weather. It's. I wish I could blame the weather, but I'm brain dead on sunny days, too. Thank you very much. Feel free to disagree. Anyway, when I was interviewing Robert Swope, one of the things that he said was, well, these are the tricks that folks on the left like to play. Well, it's not really this. You don't really understand what the legislation is all about. Here's a link. See if you can figure it out. And so that's what, when these council members, when you email them, that's what they're going to say. They're going to say, well, you don't really understand. You're too stupid to understand that this is not any kind of a sanctuary city legislation. And it, to me, anyway, it clearly is. But what they're trying to do is they're trying to mask or disguise what their true intentions are. And that's a very big deal. Now, one of the things that Robert said yesterday, Robert Swope, a councilman, said yesterday was, because I said, listen, anybody who is a Republican would think and would obviously know that this would be that line that you do not cross. I understand rhinos. I understand the difference between a rhino and a conservative and all that. But one of the things that I think he said was, well, think about it this way. You know, we have a government, we have a state who seems to be okay with illegals getting in-state tuition, right? So, in other words, we've already gone down this road. But see, I was making the distinction between this whole big conversation we had about the gas tax. I'm going to just give me 30 seconds, folks, because I know a lot of you heard this yesterday. Think about the gas tax debate that we just had. Think about how angry and divisive it got, not only on the radio, but also on social media. And boy, you look at, think about it this way, and I'm going to broaden this out a little bit. Here in Tennessee, it was the gas tax and that whole conversation that was really divisive. And there was this whole big conversation, which I'm not going to get into, about what is a true conservative opinion or viewpoint or standpoint, whatever, on the gas tax here in Tennessee. Well, then you expand that out and you say, okay, well, let's look at the election of 2016. Does a real conservative, does a true conservative vote for President Trump? A lot of people said no. And then I was the guy that was saying, well, wait a minute. Okay, if you're not voting for President Trump, then you're basically, in my opinion, voting for Hillary Clinton. And that's one of the reasons I think why she was able to win the popular vote. That's all beside the point. But for me, I can't imagine there is any Republican who would look at this bill and who would look at what it does, and it handcuffs, and Ralph will talk about this with the sheriff tomorrow morning at 7:06. But when you look at the fact that it handcuffs law enforcement and it gives people who are on benefits the ability to get said state benefits without showing any kind of ID or anything else, that's a problem. And asking about their immigration status, that is a problem. And so anybody who is a Republican who looks at this bill and looks at this legislation, looks at this this ordinance from the Metro City Council and says this is a good idea, I mean, I'm going to be stunned. I mean, I've had disagreements with Republicans before, trust me. But if this goes down and Nashville, I was talking to a guy today who said, you know what? And he lives in Antioch. He said, if this goes down and if Nashville becomes a sanctuary city, he said, I'm going to sell my house and move. He said that. And I wonder, because remember, one of my opening monologues on this particular issue was the fact that a lot of folks, including yours truly, by the way, I have put down roots here in Nashville and here in Middle Tennessee. I love it here. And you want to talk about the driving forces that are causing people to leave states like California. Well, this is it. So right now, Nashville is one of the shining cities in America, and business is good, and Nashville is good, and things are going well here in Nashville. But you want to make us an official sanctuary city? Really? When everything else is going good. All of a sudden now, you're going to make Nashville a sanctuary city, and before you know it, we're going to have MS-13 here. We're going to have gangs here. We're going to have a lot of these welfare fraud will be going on as well. Crime's going to go up. We're going to have criminals running the streets. And you don't think this is going to affect you in, say, Williamson County? You don't think this is going to affect you in Wilson County? Well, let me ask you this. Do you think that when if Nashville is going to be a sanctuary city, you don't think those MS-13 gang members can hop on I-65 and drive south a few exits, get off on Cool Springs or Murfreesboro Road or whatever it is and head into Franklin, maybe have a few home invasion robberies or whatever it is. Same with Wilson County. Drive east on 40. Knock off a few homes there. Now, listen, just so you know, I'm not saying that, you know, quote unquote, all of these people who are here illegally are the types that'll knock off a home or, you know, do a home invasion robbery or whatever it is, or murder, rape, pillage, all that kind of stuff. I'm not saying that all of those people who are here illegally are committing violent crimes. But when they are committing violent crimes, we need to have the ability to ask them their immigration status. We need to be able to work with ICE to make sure that we have the ability to either deport their you-know-what or keep them in jail until we can figure out what to do with them. Instead of just, you know, in the example I used with Councilman Swope, which was, we had a number of different examples, but one of the ones that I used was a classic one, which is the DUI, right? We've seen in situations where it's been a sanctuary city and you have one of these folks who decide to drive illegally and drunk. And since we're not allowed to ask them their immigration status, then they're able to go off and we don't hold them. And they're allowed to drive another day and get behind the wheel of a car, drunk, and kill a family of five. So if that's what the Metro Council wants to do, if that's what Mayor Megan Berry wants to do, I will tell you this, folks, it is incredibly disappointing. And so you're literally talking about changing the fabric of the city that is one of the best cities in America. And why would you do that? Why? Is it because of political correctness? Is it because they're trying to be, quote unquote, welcoming? And one of the things that I said when I first really started digging deep into this story was, well, the mayor says that she wants to be welcoming. Really? Well, look who you're welcoming in. You're welcoming people who, one, are illegal, and two, we know that MS-13 and some of these other horrific gang members and drug dealers and all this other kind of stuff, they are drawn to sanctuary cities. Look at the problem you have in places like San Francisco and Austin, Texas, and all these other places. Do you want to be San Francisco? No, let me just go ahead and answer the question for you. No, we don't want to be San Francisco. But look where those liberal policies have gotten cities like San Francisco and Washington, D.C., and some of Los Angeles. Look where those policies have taken those cities. Detroit, Michigan is another one. I mean, I could just, Oakland, California. I mean, do I have to keep going? No, I don't have to keep going. One of my favorite stories of 2016 was the story of in Oakland, California, right? You remember this story? And they were having a city council meeting. And during the city council meeting, there was gunshots right outside. And during the city council meeting, I did this whole story for you. During the city council meeting, one of the council members made some sort of a remark. And everybody was upset about the remark. And basically, he said something to the extent of, you know, here in Oakland or here in downtown, you might want to stay away from the windows. And there was some laughter inside the room. But when that story got out, people were upset because they thought it was a racist comment because this was in one of these inner city neighborhoods in downtown Oakland. And everybody seemed more upset, literally. I kid you not. People were more upset about the fact that this guy, this, you know, white male, God help us, right? A white male said this, and more people were upset about his rather humorous comment than about the fact that there were gunshots right outside in Oakland, California, and the fact that there are murders that are running rampant in Oakland, California, which I don't know for a fact, but I'd be willing to bet that that also is a sanctuary city. But if not, it's probably flowing over from San Francisco. So this is one of those stories, and this is, for me anyway, there is no gray area here. There's absolutely none. And whether or not you're counting on President Trump to take care of the illegal immigration situation, whether you think that the state legislators are going to be able to take care of this, whether you think that the governor will be able to block this move by the Metro City Council, we need to be on this. And we need to make sure that we have all the facts and all the information, and we need to make sure that they know, our state lawmakers, they need to know, and Metro Council as well, they need to know that we know what they're trying to do. And so when I got that email from, I think the person's name was, I got several of them, one of them was Lynn. And so she said, well, this is what I got from the state lawmaker, and I don't, or not state lawmaker, the council person. And the guy basically was a very dismissive email back and said, well, it's clearly not a sanctuary city law. Here's the legislation. And it's all, you know, all of these you know, fancy words, whereas Nashville is this, and whereas, it's just like mind-numbingly dull. But in there, it talks about how we will not, as a city in Nashville, Tennessee, we will not utilize any time or resources to cooperate with ICE unless there's a warrant. Now, I fully, listen, trust me, I get that we always need warrants, but there are also times when we just need to be able to ascertain who exactly is this person and are they here legally or illegally. And so tomorrow at 7:05, 7:06, Ralph is going to speak with Davidson County Sheriff Darren Hall, going to ask him about this question. And at 12:35, I will have the honor of speaking to May Beavers. And so I know that both Ralph and I, and obviously Michael and Phil, all of us here at WTN are very, and I mean very, concerned about what is going on with Metro Council. 221 on Super Talk 99.7 WTN, Dan Mandis Show. Well, what is this woman's name, Belle? This is one of those things where I am way out of my league. I'm trying to figure out who this Amorosa, is it Manigault? This lady that was a former something or another with President Trump.
There is a reason that media, through her entire time on The Apprentice,
yes,
has only referred to her as Omarosa.
Oh, because nobody knows how to say her last name?
It's just so much. You say Omarosa, everybody knows who you're talking about. It's like saying Cher or Moses.
Or Moses?
Yeah.
Well, anywho, what does it say about me that I have no idea who Omarosa is? Whatever. Anyway, so apparently Omarosa decided to refer to herself as the Honorable Amorosa Manigault. And so that is part of the reason why the Congressional Black Caucus decided to snub President Trump. So let's talk about this a little bit. Because one of the things that we talk about often enough, and I spend a pretty decent amount of time in the first hour talking about how the left, and we all know this, they're the party of diversification and unity. Well, not so much. So the Congressional Black Caucus announced yesterday afternoon that their members had voted to decline an invitation to meet President Trump at the White House that was extended to them by the Honorable Amorosa, a title that apparently ruffled some lawmakers' feathers. You know what? I'm sure there's some sort of a political reason why they didn't like the fact that she, I mean, it sounds, I mean, kind of weird, to be honest with you. I mean, I think if you're supposed to be the honorable, that means you're a judge, doesn't it? So I don't know. They say that through an objective assessment, we have seen no evidence that your administration, they say, acted on our calls for action. And we have, in fact, witnessed steps that will affirmatively hurt Black communities, wrote Chairman Cedric Richmond, a Democrat, of course, out of Louisiana, in a letter to the president who had wanted a meeting with the entire caucus as a follow-up to a leadership meeting that took place back in March. So I want to make sure you understand what's happening. What's happening is the president has asked these folks, please, what we would like to do is have a meeting, have a caucus, have a discussion, so that we can figure out why it is that you're upset with me. Why is it you keep screaming for my impeachment, one? And, oh, I don't know, maybe, just maybe, we can figure out what's going on with the Black community. Maybe we can figure out, you know, and I don't want to go through all the, you know, the quote-unquote racist talking points, but maybe we can figure out why there's so many fatherless households. Maybe we can figure out why it is that there's so much crime in some of these inner cities. Maybe we can talk about any number of things. Maybe we can talk about bringing jobs back to the inner cities. But instead, the Congressional Black Caucus just decided to turn their backs on the president. While we agreed, they say, to see, here's the thing, is that what the, let me tell you, let's just cut through the crap. Let me tell you the reason why the Congressional Black Caucus does not want to meet with President Trump. The reason why they don't want to meet with President Trump is because they truly don't want President Trump to succeed in his agenda. And part of President Trump's agenda is to bring jobs back to the inner city and fix the inner cities and do whatever he can to help the Black community. And I'd be willing to bet that perhaps maybe, just maybe, it's in the interest of some of these lawmakers to not help President Trump help their communities because it's to their best interest that their communities remain the way that they are. There's a reason why Detroit has been such a crap hole for a long time. There's a reason why Washington, D.C. has had issues for so many years. It's because they get more from anger and divisiveness and feeling like everybody else is responsible for their problems. And so by extension, it's the Republicans' fault. And so why would the Congressional Black Caucus decide that they want to meet with the president? If he's going to try and help their communities, well, forget that. Our jobs and our power is secure as long as our communities are having challenges. I guess I could say that. Well, I think I just did. Anyway, they continue on through an objective assessment. Does anybody here think that they were really objective? Does anybody think that the likes, I'm assuming that Maxine Waters is on the Congressional Black Caucus. Does anybody really think that Maxine Waters is objective? No. I'm sparing you the audio of Maxine Waters screaming at the top of her lungs for impeachment. As much as I enjoy playing Maxine Waters, whatever. Anyway, through an objective assessment, we have seen no evidence that your administration acted on our calls for action, and we have, in fact, witnessed steps that will affirmatively hurt Black communities, blah, 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 blah. While we agreed to explore possible future discussions when we first met, it has become abundantly clear that a conversation with the entire CBC, Congressional Black Caucus, would not be entirely productive given the actions taken by your administration since our first meeting. I'd love for President Trump to say, no, I'm not going to meet with the Congressional Black Caucus. Why should I? Can you imagine the S storm that would happen if President Trump said, I'm not going to meet with the CBC, the Congressional Black Caucus? Why should I? They clearly don't want to make their inner cities great again, or they clearly don't want to help their community. I mean, I think it's a fair observation, is it not? So there's a number of different layers of agenda within this story that I think I've addressed. Manigault told, this is Amorosa Manigault, by the way, if I'm shanking her name, I apologize in advance, but to be candid and honest, I have no idea who she is, and I frankly don't care. Manigault told DailyMail.com, in response to the White House, would continue to work with individual members of the caucus who reach out, and that she was disappointed that Richmond was reneging on the agreement to meet. Yeah. I mean, it's not surprising to me that they decided to not meet with the president, because that would, in their minds, perhaps, maybe, wouldn't that give the president some credibility? And in their minds, the president has no credibility. And I think that's also perhaps part of what is going on here. So that is the story and the perspective behind the headline. So a couple of other things I want to get to real quick before Phil Valentine comes on at 3:06. A Senate GOP has shifted its focus now to Loretta Lynch. This is great news. Now, we all know what James Comey did. We all know that when James Comey was testifying, he said, well, Loretta Lynch asked me at one point if I could not refer to the Hillary Clinton investigation as an investigation, could he please refer to it as a matter? And that, of course, caused a whole big storm. Well, Senate Republicans are now clamoring to hear from Loretta Lynch after Comey said what he said about the Clinton email investigation. Senator John Cornyn, out of Texas, the number two Senate Republican, also a member of both the Intelligence and Judiciary Committees, said it would be very helpful. I bet you he said this with one of the creepy Joe Biden smiles, you know, like the passive-aggressive smiles. It would be very helpful for Lynch to testify before the Judiciary panel, which oversees the Justice Department. Senator Lindsey Graham also would love to hear from Loretta Lynch and is pushing for the Judiciary Committee to, quote, get more involved, saying the accusations now that the current and former attorney general were political, that has nothing to do with Russia as much as it has to do with how the Department of Justice is being run. He wants to find out all about that. Now, we all know that there was a ton of collusion with Hillary, whether it was with the media or now apparently the Justice Department and Loretta Lynch. So let's talk about collusion, shall we? I would love to see Loretta Lynch testify. Now, whether or not she actually will is beyond me. And also, Judicial Watch is now getting involved. And just to give you some headlines, Judicial Watch is now getting involved in a major lawsuit against the Department of Justice, and it does indeed involve James Comey. What they're trying to do is they're trying to get a hold of the Comey memos. I mentioned this very briefly in the first hour. Now, we all know Judicial Watch. They are always going after the government. They're always trying to get memos and emails and all that kind of stuff because, let's face it, we know that certainly during the Obama administration, they have been rather secretive at best and not necessarily transparent. So now they're saying that they have filed a Freedom of Information Act request against the Department of Justice for information and documents related to Comey's private meetings with President Trump. And they want to basically get hold of those memos. So they've filed all these FOIA requests, and they're trying to force James Comey to either get those memos back from the New York Times or whatever it is that they need to do. Now, you mean to tell me, by the way, that I don't even know if I mentioned this. There was so much stuff to cover during the James Comey testimony when Comey said, oh, I don't have access to those memos. Is there anybody who really believes that James Comey does not have a copy of those memos? Oh, you're not calling James Comey a liar, are you? Well, yeah, actually, I am calling James Comey. I'm calling James Comey a blatant liar, as a matter of fact. Liar, liar, pants on fire. It's what I'm saying about James Comey. So the good news is that Judicial Watch is looking to get a hold of those memos. The big question is, okay, so if they get the memos, when will it be? Because we know that these FOIA requests can essentially seem like they either take years and years to come to fruition and nobody ever really pays any attention to them, and they can basically be disregarded. It's 241 on Supertalk 99.7 WTN. One of the things that I think a lot of folks are talking about right now is the fact that it seems to me like, and this is one of my big stories of the day, is that the left, it seems like now they're finally beginning to realize a lot of these mistakes that they've made over the past 2 years. And the big question is, have they learned? Now, my opinion is, no, they haven't learned, because we just figured out now that waking up to the headlines that a lot of these folks on the left are saying, oh, Nancy Pelosi is to blame. Somebody even said, who was it? Oh, I can't remember who it was now, but somebody said, I think it was the guy out of Connecticut, who said their brand, the brand of the Democrats, is more vitriolic. It's worse than President Trump's brand. There's other people who are saying, listen, all of this business about Russia, all of that is just a distraction. Now, we've seen polls that show that the American people simply do not care about the Russian investigation. They may even feel like President Trump did have some sort of collusion between his campaign and the Russians, but people literally don't care. So the big question now is, as we move into 2018, the Democrats have lost the White House. They've lost, of course, the Senate and the House of Representatives. We all know all this. They lost these four or five different special elections. And what have they learned? Now, one of the parts of the big sort of umbrella topic that I was talking about earlier is the fact that the Democrats, they literally have no money. I mean, people are simply not donating to the Democrats. And there's a number of reasons for that. I think because the donors are realizing what you and I already know, that they simply have no brand. And the brand that they do have is based on rage. It's based on anger. It's based on lies. It's based on hate. And it's based on accusations. What accusations, Dan? Well, you know the accusations. I get tired of saying it. Racism, sexism, all that stuff. You just get tired of, I get tired of talking about it. You get tired of hearing about it. It's almost like we all just know. I mean, perfect example is now that the Senate has unveiled their bill, or their, what is it, the discussion, whatever it is, I forget what they're calling it now, but the Affordable Care Act. And what they're saying is that here it is. And they've gone through, and I went through all the points earlier, and they're saying, oh, it's all about how the Republicans in the Senate, and certainly the House of Representatives and President Trump, everybody wants to starve children and kill old people. Well, the American people simply are not buying that. But one of the things that I failed to touch on in the first hour, so I'm gonna kind of expand upon something that was a big story, I think it was this morning and late last night. And that is the fact that as they are now doing, which they do all the time, the autopsy of the John Ossoff campaign there in Georgia. The amount of people in Hollywood, you know, I've talked about over the past couple of days how much money was donated to this guy's campaign. Do you know how many people in Hollywood gave endorsements to this guy, gave money to this guy, had appearances with this guy? Let's just go down the list, shall we? Because this is a who's who of the liberal left. Rosie O'Donnell, Jane Fonda, Jessica Lange, Sean Daniel, Connie Britton. Is it Britton? The lady from Nashville? It's Britton, Connie Britton, B-R-I-T-T-O-N.
Pretty sure.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Who cares? Sam Watterson, Kira Sedgwick are some of the stars that donated to Ossoff's campaign. Others, like Alyssa Milano, volunteered to go door-to-door in suburban Atlanta in his district. Let's not forget Chelsea Handler. You remember this one? Famously invited nearly 7 million followers to get out and vote for Ossoff on April 11th. Oh, which, by the way, the thing wasn't until April 18th. That was the part of the story that I thought was really funny. But anyway, clearly, even George Takei came out and supported John Ossoff. Now, George Takei, he's the guy from Star Trek. He's also, he's the one that's gay, right? George Takei, he's a guy. You're a Trekkie.
Yeah, he's married to Brad Altman.
Oh, and I'm not sure Brad Altman. It doesn't matter. Anyway,
his husband.
I know that, but how do you know? Is Brad Altman an actor?
No.
How do you know the name of George Takei's husband?
I'm a Takei fan.
Really? All right, very good.
I mean, I don't necessarily agree with his politics.
No, I fully respect your ability to separate the two between being a fan of George Takei and not being a fan of his politics, and that's fine. It's all good and well. No judgment here.
Live long and prosper.
Bell, this is a safe space for you. It's okay. I'd like to see you in my office
Thank
after
you.
The show. Anyway, so just like we saw in the general election, this special election that we saw in Georgia is nothing more than a smaller version of what we saw in the general election. And we know that we've had Fox News, we've had the New York Times, we've had a number of different outlets coming out now and really just calling the left to the carpet, calling themselves to the carpet. Now, can you imagine this? I'm going to wrap up the show with this. Because we're all obsessed, right? I mean, I know I'm obsessed with 2020 and what it is that the Republicans are going to do. Do you know who the Democrats are talking about bringing out in 2020 to run against President Trump, assuming he runs? Eric Flippin Holder, former attorney general for President Obama. This is a guy who has been so mired down in controversies. When I saw this, I thought, please, Eric, run in 2020. Let the Democrats bring you forth against President Trump. And we could talk about all of the different things that Eric Holder has been dealing with over the past many years as far as all of these different controversies. Now, Yahoo News interviewed this guy when he was doing some political work out in California this week, and he shared his plans with Yahoo News. He says, now is the time to be more visible, he says. Now is the time to be heard. Holder, who was President Obama's attorney general, first attorney general, and the country's first black attorney general, at that, realized that in politics, he was flying mainly under the radar. He says, up to now, I've been more behind the scenes, but that's about to change. I have a certain status. I have a certain status as a former attorney general, a certain familiarity as the first African-American attorney general. This dude's already playing the race card. I got four words for you. Operation Fast and Furious. ATF agents under his Justice Department allowed thousands of weapons to walk into the hands of Mexican drug cartels. Holder denied it, but later admitted that it happened, so he's a liar as well. Some of the weapons were, of course, as we all know, used in murders, including that of Border Patrol agent Brian Terry. So we all know about the targeting of journalists. We all know about, yes, Operation Fast and Furious. We all know about the IRS and how this guy and the Obama administration utilized the IRS as basically a bludgeon for conservative and Tea Party groups. It goes on and on. But this is almost as bad. I would say this is almost as bad as Hillary Clinton coming out of the woods. And remember what we talked about, the lack of self-awareness? Do you remember that? Where I said, does Hillary not understand that every time this woman speaks, the entire nation and really the entire world rolls their eyes when she starts talking about how she's a victim of sexism and how the Russians and James Comey did all these things to her? Well, it's the same thing with Eric Holder, talking about how he has a certain status as the former attorney general. Why is he not behind bars? Didn't he lie under oath? I mean, this whole Eric Holder thing is slowly starting to creep back into my psyche, my consciousness, because I blocked a lot of this stuff out. But if he lied and then he came back and he said, well, I was lying. Really? Well, then why aren't you behind bars? I mean, I could go on and on about this. Anyway, so Eric Holder, please run for president in 2020. And very quickly, and last but not least, Hillary Clinton under investigation again now for her email situation. The State Department has opened a formal inquiry. And I've been telling you about this for a week, by the way. The State Department has opened a formal inquiry into the possible mishandling of classified information by Hillary and her aides. Now, I've been telling you about the situation with this Bangladesh Prime Minister, Sheikh Hasina, and her son, Sanjib Wazid. And what they're doing is they're having the audacity to investigate a Clinton friend and donor, Muhammad Yunus, for corruption. And so word is that because this guy was donating money to the Clinton Foundation, she had sent some folks out from the State Department to pretty much pressure the Bangladesh government, the prime minister there and her son, to drop the investigation into this guy because he was a donor to the Clinton Foundation. And so now what this is doing for Chuck Grassley is this is opening up the email investigation as well. And it's just like seemingly Robert Mueller and the investigation into President Trump and collusion and obstruction of justice is this has all kinds of tentacles. And the more tentacles that it has, then the more angles and the more sideline stories they're going to continue to investigate. So as Hillary comes out of the woods, well, the fangs come out in the Senate, and Chuck Grassley now in the State Department, they are looking for another formal investigation into Hillary, who somehow still has access to classified information. How is it that she and her staff still have those security clearances is beyond me. They need to get those revoked, and that's part of this investigation. Okay, 252, Supertalk, 99.7 WTN. It's coming up on 3 o'clock, Supertalk, 99.7 WTN. Hey, don't forget to log on to 99.7WTN.com. Click on the Sweet Deals tab. If you are a golfer, great deals for you. $129 gets you 8 18-hole rounds of golf and 4 9-hole rounds of golf, a $258 value. So check that out at 99.7WTN.com. Also, don't forget, at 7:06 tomorrow morning, Sheriff Darren Hall, Metro Sheriff Darren Hall, joins Ralph Bristol. And at 12:35, May Beavers joins me as Music City, the possibility that we are going to go from Music City to Sanctuary City, at least if Metro Council has their way, does continue. So all those stories and a whole lot more continue tomorrow and next with Phil Valentine right here on Super Talk 99.7 WTN.